All right, we're continuing the conversation, talking to the speakers from the CTO Advisor virtual conference a year ago. It's actually almost been a year and a half in another couple of weeks. Can you believe it, Tim?
I can't believe it. Seems like just yesterday we were having a conversation about this.
So for those of you who don't know the voices, Tim Crawford, Avoya, he's one of my peer independent analysts. We are on a ton of different analyst calls together. Tim brings a unique view from the CIO perspective. Obviously, I'm from the CTO perspective. And we want to talk, have a little impromptu talk about return to work. Tim, when I first engaged clients last year, when they were reacting to the pandemic and getting folks the ability to collaborate and work remotely, I actually had customers taking their desktop computers, not laptop, desktop computers off of their desk and taking it home to continue the business of business.
Yep.
How things have changed. Now we're not talking about kind of catching up to collaboration. We're now talking about the impact of all the past year and a half, going on longer than a year and a half now, of remote work and thinking about returning to work. What's at the top of mind for CIOs as they're considering returning to the office?
You know, first and foremost, Keith, it's great to chat with you again. Always a pleasure. And, you know, I look forward to these conversations with you because, like you said, you know, we come from two different perspectives and talk a lot about the same things and bring those two different viewpoints into the mix. You know, return to work is still going on as a top conversation subject. And frankly, what we had planned even just 3 months ago has now been kind of thrown to the wind, and we're having to rethink this all over yet again. And it goes back to something that I've talked about. I know you've talked about a bit too, which is, you know, we have to stop talking about the new normal, or rather the new normal as an end state, but rather the next normal and how we're going to go through this process. And when we start thinking about that, we start thinking very differently about what remote work really means for folks, you know, how they're going to work. You know, today, everybody has moved to better high-speed connectivity in their homes than they've had in the past. They probably have a decent microphone that they're using because they're, you know, doing a lot more audio, or a better camera that they're using. And so you're right. When we started down this path a year and a half or almost 2 years ago now, you know, people were just grabbing whatever they could. I know teams that leaders that told their teams, take your credit card, go to every big box store, office supply store, grab every keyboard, mouse, monitor that you can get your hands on, because we need to get that out to our staff and get them functional. Now people are functional remotely. I think the question is, you know, what does remote work look like moving forward? And what does return to work look like moving forward? And so timing is one thing, but I think the bigger question is, how do we do that in a hybrid sense? Meaning, okay, Keith and I normally work together in an office, but now we're both remote. And at some point, Keith might go back in the office, but Tim's going to be remote. And then the next day, it might be vice versa. And so how do we manage that? And it's not trivial. It's really challenging. And so I think when you start looking at the tools, you start looking at the processes, you have to think through that. And this is exactly what CIOs are starting to do, is how do we start to, and they've been doing it for a while, I guess I should say, how do we work effectively in a hybrid scenario? And it's not trivial.
Yeah, it's, as I think through, we just returned to church just this past weekend. So I came off of the road trip where I was consuming our church sessions on the road. Everybody was virtual. So it really didn't matter if I was in Chicago or San Diego or Seattle. My experience was equal to everyone else's. We returned to regular church services. And we can apply this beyond just religious ceremonies. We can think about school and other settings where we have to collaborate, communities of standards where we would typically get together and collaborate. Now we're collaborating remotely, and that worked fine for what it was. Now we're in this hybrid world, and last week was the first week where my church met together, and I felt disconnected. The church service was going on, and I couldn't, you know, in the chat session say LOL to the rest of the members who were also virtual and et cetera. So it changes the dynamic of collaboration. So I know part of this is a cultural problem. We're not focusing mainly on the cultural problem, but mainly on the what the CIO is challenged with. And I guess that's the question I want to ask you. How is the CIO best equipped to handle something that he doesn't control, which is the cultural aspect of it? He's asked to react or predict. He or she is asked to react or predict the changes in culture and adapt the technology to that. Well, how are they handling that part of the role?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question, Keith. And I think the short answer is they're struggling with it. He or she that is leading that IT organization, they're trying different things. They're experimenting, trying to figure out how they can leverage technology appropriately. And I underscore the word appropriately, because not all technology fits every culture and every situation. And I think it's important to understand that. And CIOs are struggling with that right now. They're trying to figure out, and this has been true for some period of time, what technologies make sense considering the culture of our specific organization. And just like humans are different, you're different than me, I'm different than the next person. Guess what? Organizations are different too. Their cultures are different. Even in the same industry, even competing organizations, they're very different. Yet we're trying to use this one-size-fits-all technology to kind of plug in and address some of these challenges. And it just doesn't work that way, right? It's a real problem. So a lot of experimentation, you know, try something. If it doesn't work, great. Can it? Try something different. But I think, you know, to your point about culture, I don't necessarily think the CIO is the right person to necessarily set that culture, but they are definitely the right person to facilitate understanding the company's culture and how tools kind of fit into it. And that in its own right is a collaborative process. You know, it's not just simply how do we get on a video call together and talk, but it's also who are the right people to get on? How do we kind of, to your example about church and not feeling connected, how do we ensure that the people that are in the room and the people that are kind of calling in or connecting remotely, that they're equal citizens in that conversation? So this is one of many challenges. If I'm remote into a meeting, how do I become at equal footing with everyone in the room? Meaning I can collaborate equally, I can see the body language, I can feel like I can get my point across without having to say, excuse me, hey, I have a question. You know, we've all experienced that. But then the other piece to this is just something that we don't think about often enough, and we have to in this new hybrid world, which is how do we make decisions? You know, companies are built on a lot of different decisions over the course of time. And so everything kind of revolves around making a decision. You know, collaboration results to a decision. You know, whether it's the group that makes the decision or an individual that makes the decision, it really doesn't matter. But the point is, we have to think about these processes, how we work. And how we work is broken down into a lot of different facets. And so that's why I don't think that sits at the feet of the CIO, but I do think the CIO is well suited, or they should be well suited, to understand how their company makes decisions, how they collaborate, and how these tools kind of fit into it. And so that facilitation process is really something that they can strive to lead.
So we can't, again, this is super early. Like, me and you have been on social channels talking about what are we going to do about AWS reInvent. Mm-hmm. It's going to be an in-person conference and probably the biggest event of the year. It's going to be probably the biggest in-person IT conference of the year. And it will definitely be the biggest remote IT conference of the year. And as analysts and influencers and people who facilitate discussions, how are we going to do these things from a practical sense? So I think there'll be learnings from that. But as we sit in a unique situation where we're listening to a lot of these tool companies, what have been some of the key themes that you can, that CIOs, CTOs, and IT execs and executives in general can take away from where the tool companies are thinking?
Yeah, you know, if we use it as somewhat of a litmus test, you know, just kind of a canary in the coal mine, if you will, and look at vendor events. You know, this summer we started to see, and you and I are involved in a lot of the same events, we started to see folks that were talking about getting back in person starting this fall. Amazon being one of them, but even smaller events. Some of those have actually since cycled back to say, no, we're not going to do it in person. We're going to go back and do a virtual. We're just not ready yet. So they're adapting to the kind of current state of the world and understanding that, okay, maybe we'd like to be in person, but we're just not there yet. And I think companies can kind of follow that lead to some degree. When you talk about getting large groups of people together, the last thing you want is to get a large group of people together, have an outbreak, and then all of a sudden now people can't be in the room. But worse than that, now you've got a whole bunch of people that are sick. And so you don't want to be that company that is responsible for that kind of scenario. And so even with the physical events, I'm starting to see an increase of requirements. And we see this with Amazon as one example, where the only people that can attend are those that are fully vaccinated. You must show proof of full vaccination. It's not enough to say, hey, I'm unvaccinated, but I can test negative. That's not enough anymore. And so, you know, it may sound draconian to some, but I think, you know, you have to think about it from their perspective too. And I think CIOs and other executives have to consider the ramifications. If you are bringing people back together, why are you doing that? And what are the consequences of doing that? Yes, there are some pros to it, but you also have to consider the risks as well. And then this whole hybrid thing becomes challenging in its own right, because if you're all in person, like go back 2 years ago, we're all in person, whether it's an event, whether it's in the office, we're in person. We know how that works, right? We've been doing that forever. And then the beginning of 2020, we all went remote. We figured out how that works in pretty short order. The thing is, we were all on level footing because everybody was remote. It wasn't like, okay, they took Tim's team and Tim's team went remote, but Keith's team is still in the office. No, everybody went remote. So it was a level playing field. Now what we're trying to do is figure out this hybrid sense of, well, what if some people are in and some people are out? That's uncharted water. And we haven't figured out how to do that. Because the fear is that if you revert back to the way we used to do it for in person, and you have some people remote, now you have an uneven playing field. And so you have to figure out how to bring those people together. And this is part of the challenge. So I think, you know, looking at the events, using that as kind of a litmus test, a canary in the coal mine of where things are going, I think that's a great thing. Look at how some of these companies have said, look, we're not going to bring people back into the office. We're not even going to entertain that until after the end of this year, you know, let things kind of quell and settle down. There's another piece here, Keith, that we haven't talked about, which is over the course of the last year and a half or so, people have moved. Hmm. There are a lot of people who have long since left their domicile of being close to the office and moved to some other part of the country, of their state, of the country, different part of the world. I know people that have actually moved overseas because they're like, I don't need to be in the office anymore, so I'm going to go live where I want to live and work remote. So, you know, there's another dynamic that we have to think about, which is what happens if we do need to get people back into an office for a given situation. Now they're not all close. And so this brings another little wrinkle to the planning and the thinking accordingly. And then bring this full circle back to what you were saying with your church gatherings. What's the culture of it? What's the culture of the organization and what are they comfortable with? And so you add all of this up, Keith, and I think you very quickly see there are a lot of moving parts to this. It's not as simple as saying, oh, well, we'll just put Zoom in or we'll just put Teams in and we'll be good to go. It's not that simple.
No, it isn't that simple. And I think through not just people have moved, we've now used the occasion to hire people that we couldn't hire before in remote locations that were probably underserved or undermined for talent before. Now there's not this hard requirement that that person needs to be in a specific geography. My son was hired for a position in Austin over a year ago, and he's still here in Chicago. Mm-hmm. So that there's that dynamic. I ran into a lovely couple on the road. One woman worked for a biopharma, the other one worked for Google, and they were casually making their way up to over to the Northeast from Oakland because they mm-hmm. had this freedom. And this supreme talent that you want to keep, it's very difficult once the toothpaste is out of the tube. Hey, we can work remotely. We've proven that we can be effective. And CIOs specifically have to deal with that. And this is something that me and you could talk about in the future, which is, you know what, this you've said it, I've said it, the number one challenge that CIOs face is talent. Yeah. And now we have this wonderful tool to attract more talent. And how do we keep it, but still be effective in our roles?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Keith. And there's another piece that's going to come into play here, I think, in short order. We're starting to see it a little bit, but we'll see it in more color in short order, which is when you think about ESG, environmental, social, and governance issues. So take Texas, for example, and I don't want to make this a political conversation, but let's say Texas or California or New York or Florida, they make certain social statements around laws and what they believe in. And let's say you don't agree with that. Okay, well, maybe you don't want to work for a company that is based in Texas then, or based in Florida or based in California because of that. Well, now you have the ability to move. So, or, you know, the vice versa is true too, which is, let's say you believe in what's happening in that part of the country, you can move toward that. And that wasn't always the case in the past, right? So I think, you know, ESG is going to play a up-and-coming role into these conversations and decisions that are made. The other piece that you have to think about is, yes, we opened up the talent pool globally. So now I told this story sometime back, a CIO for a tech firm that was going to relocate someone from Europe. And then the pandemic hit and they're like, you know what? We don't need to relocate you. Stay where you are. Your family's there. You're based in this one country in Europe. Stay there. You can work remotely. And so they didn't have to relocate to the Bay Area. Great. But then the other piece is, how do you start to create economic parity for some of these folks too? And we're starting to see problems around that. You know, I used to live in San Francisco. I was making $200,000 a year, and now I've moved to Omaha, Nebraska, which has a lower cost of living. Can I still make $200,000 a year there? Or does that job not demand that? And so the reverse is true too, right? I'm coming from Cheyenne, Wyoming, and now I want to move to San Francisco. You know, we've done that a lot where we said, okay, but to come to San Francisco, we got to bump up your salary so you can afford to buy a house or pay for an apartment or, you know, just to live. Well, we have to find equitable ways to make that work. And that's one of the other challenges that CIOs are fighting with right now, because especially in the tech space, which is very transient, in terms of people can move around. It's easy to move around, relatively speaking, versus other types of roles. These issues are coming front and center for CIOs. And so how do they start to navigate all of these other pieces in addition to everything else that I already put on the table? And you can start to see this is challenging. Oh, and by the way, talent, you know, hiring and retention, that's just one of many things that the CIO has to contend with right now. So you can start to see how the CIO role, on one hand, it's the best time to be a CIO. On the other hand, there's a lot more going on than you've ever had to deal with, too.
So, Tim, we'll wrap up. What's really great, some of the best times, is that technology has never been as great. The collaboration tools are getting better. We're learning a bunch. The public cloud has made having someone needing to literally take their desktop off of their desk and bring it home has made that a mute approach to the tooling part of it. But just as you brought up, there's a lot of things to consider. There's talent, there's ESG, there's culture, there's the reality of collaboration from a external organization perspective. How do we engage our communities of interest, such as the AWS community, which is critical towards us leading digital transformation efforts within our companies? There's so much to consider. You approach all of this stuff at Avoya. How can people kind of reach out to you to help in some of this journey?
Yeah. And, you know, one thing we didn't talk about, Keith, just to add to that, you know, when we were all in the office, if you had trouble with your desktop or laptop, fine, we'll just send a support person over to help you out. Well, now I live in, you know, Bozeman, Montana. How do I get someone out there? How do I get something to you? Because you're not productive while that system is dead. So there's a technology piece. You know, do I push patches out to people all over the world overnight, you know, for Patch Tuesday? There's a technology piece that becomes a challenge as well, especially if people don't have high-speed internet. So technology is a whole nother thing we could spend hours talking about and kind of unpacking. But thanks for having me. You know, you can reach me on the Avoa website, avoa.com, A-V-O-A.com. I'm also pretty prolific on Twitter at T Crawford, T-C-R-A-W-F-O-R-D.
All right. And if you want to find out more about the CTO Advisor, you can follow us on thectoadvisor.com, the website, at CTO Advisor is my Twitter handle. My DMs are open. I'm a brave man. Or dumb. We'll figure out in the next couple of months or so which side that come out. But all in the effort to open up collaboration and talk and meet customers where they're at, because we cannot fly as much to meet them. We'll talk to you next CTO Advisor podcast.